Hi, everybody, and welcome. I'm Michael Wagner, Chief Operating Officer of Omnia Family Wealth. What we're doing here today is the first in a series of conversations between Omnia Family Wealth and Morris and D'Angelo to talk about and really give families a high-level and holistic view of the things they should be aware of. This discussion will provide a brief overview of everything families should have on their radar, including what families should do all of the time versus just right now. We'll also discuss several important leading indicators that provide advanced warnings to help families plan more effectively. I'd like to take a moment to tell you a little bit about the two firms. Morris and D'Angelo CPAs is a cross-border boutique advisory firm that specializes and serves multi-generational family-based enterprises and their owners. Morris and D'Angelo provides high-level financial services for both families and entrepreneurs to determine how and where they should operate, expand, consolidate, and associate their earnings, including their residency and how to optimize their taxable income. Today, we have Stephen Geller joining us. Stephen is an integrating partner at Morris and D'Angelo. We're really happy to have you with us here today, Stephen.
Thank you. It's a delight to be here.
Omnia Family Wealth is a multifamily office born from a desire to serve families better. As a multifamily office, Omnia Family Wealth provides innovative, long-term solutions that help clients achieve their wealth management and financial legacy goals in a manner reflective of their fundamental values and beliefs and their vision for the future. We're happy to have joining us today Stephen Wagner, CEO of Omnia Family Wealth.
Thank you, Michael. Pleasure to be here.
Great. Thank you. We'll get right into it. I think in the current environment, there's a lot of pressures on taxes. There's a lot of conversation around social issues, around justice and inequality, in addition to the environmental challenges and opportunities that we're facing. So what does this all mean? Stephen Geller, what can people expect around taxes, potential changes, and what opportunities accompany these changes?
Great question. A Biden presidency definitely means a change in tax policy. Very aggressive. Possibly not. There are a lot of provisions. We don't need to dig too deep into those. But regardless, we've got more debt than the country's ever had. We've got a tremendous run-up in spending, and we've got a middle class that is in pain right now, and lower taxpayers who are in pain. That's got to be accounted for. This deficit's got to be paid for. I expect to see some adjustments to tax policy, and that may be some increasing in corporate rates. That may be some changes in brackets, and that may be some changes to international tax policy as well. We don't know. There are a lot of provisions on the table. One thing we should all be aware of, though, is that it's highly likely that change is coming.
Absolutely. Thank you, Stephen. Stephen Wagner, how does the impact and the outlook for taxes factor into building an asset allocation and consulting families on what to do with their wealth? How important is the outlook, and does it play into your planning process at all?
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Absolutely, and Steve's correct. The challenge facing all of us right now is the expanding of the balance sheet. The deficit as it stands today is $3.3 trillion. It was unthinkable to even hit $1 trillion. We inflated at $2 trillion with the response to COVID. The Fed's balance sheet now sits at $7 trillion. So I agree with Steve. The pressure is going to be on how do we pay for this deficit going forward. And that's got huge implications across, you know, particularly in the investment world, and how we allocate and how we think about returns going forward and how we think about allocations in different asset classes. So it's going to be a very, very challenging period. We had a Fed meeting yesterday. Chairman Powell reiterated his stance on interest rates that the Fed can control, which is, you know, short-term rates, trying to give the, you know, visibility out for several years, but also talked about the continuation of purchases in the open market. So when you think about the deficit, the Fed is the largest buyer of treasuries. We've got to issue debt to pay for you know, the deficit. We issue more and more bonds as the deficit goes up. The Fed is the largest buyer. Fed is buying $120 billion a month. So we'll get into, as we go on in this conversation, the challenges that that's going to present. But I agree with Steve. The pressure is going to be there. Either way, how do we deal with the deficit? I don't believe we can grow our way out of it.
Yeah. And Steve, we can probably talk about this more later. This really strange world of interest rates that we're living in also leads to huge opportunities for families. And as families evaluate and reevaluate their business plans, the opportunity to buy at low cap rates and take advantage of the discounts that are going on merely as a fallout of COVID and pandemic and all the other things that are going on, combined with these really low interest rates, create great opportunities for businesses, if the businesses, whether it's expansion or portfolio. The other thing is that the low interest rates create tremendous opportunities for estate planning. And we can talk more about that later on.
Sure. You know, which you mentioned how low interest rates are. And I think whether you're looking at a private or a public company, interest rates have a huge impact on valuations as well, you know, because they impact future cash flows. So we'll start with Steve Wagner, and then I'll ask, you know, Mr. Geller to comment as well. When you're dealing with families, what impacts have you seen on private company valuations? How have those families been affected? And, you know, essentially that. What impact have you seen on private company valuations, and how have families been affected by that?
Thank you, Michael. Valuations of all financial assets are inflated. So when you think about how markets or businesses price future earning streams, it all comes down to interest rates. So whether you're dealing with a private company, a public company, real estate, any financial asset has benefited in price appreciation because of low interest rates. So some of them are tied to different mechanisms. But as Steve mentioned, there are going to be tremendous opportunities for corporations and for individuals to use strategies to take advantage of what the Fed has done here with low interest rates. And that's something that anybody, particularly if you're thinking about on the individual side, estate tax issues and possible changes in estate taxes, that can be really beneficial.
Let's just add some context to this. The short-term applicable federal rate right now is 0.14%. Okay. They're practically paying us. Midterm, which is 3 to 9 years, is 0.35%. The long-term rate is 1%. 10-year bond yesterday was 0.69. I don't remember ever seeing rates like this. And so, yes, I agree with Stephen. Everything is interest rate driven, valuations and decision-making. So again, this poses challenges on rates of return, but it also poses tremendous opportunities.
So I think we're in a really unique time in history, right? With interest rates at all-time lows, the estate tax exemptions at all-time highs. Yeah. Stephen Geller, what are some things that families can be doing to take advantage of this really unique time in history?
I probably have a conversation every day about the dynamics of estate planning right now. Everybody should be looking at their estate plans. Even somebody who doesn't have a taxable estate today will likely have a taxable estate in 10 years, simply because assets grow. And we know that the estate exemption is going to go down. It's scheduled to go down in 2026, but there are pressures to pull it down now. In addition to that, several states already have an estate tax, and more states are looking at estate taxes. For example, California is talking about an estate tax with a pretty low exemption. Okay, so that having been said, what are some of the things we can do? Discount, 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 gift, 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 sell, sell, sell. Get the appreciation out of your estate. If we do that through gifts, we do that through sales to non-grantor trusts. The benefit of doing a sale, of course, is that we're at super low interest rates now. There's no gain on it. And as interest rates go up, that loan can be discounted. There are a lot of strategies to be using right now, but as Stephen mentioned before, valuations are way off right now. So not only do we have the opportunity with the higher exemption, but we've got lower valuations. Add to that discounts and loans, and there's huge opportunity. We are very busy right now doing estate plans.
As well you should be. It's the opportunities are truly unique in this time period with these low interest rates.
Yeah.
and the uncertainty that we're facing.
There are also some interesting judicial things going on. So there was recently a tax court case that put a 80%+ discount on an interest in a family limited partnership. And when we're in a climate that provides those kinds of discounts, and that one was unique, that creates enormous opportunity to transfer wealth.
Absolutely. And I was going to say, it's so difficult to separate taxes from politics, right? And so how much does the political environment really affect our outlook and how we potentially prepare for administration change? So a lot of things have been discussed lately, including a wealth tax. We mentioned estate exemptions being high and potentially being under pressure. Inflation is at all-time lows as well. So maybe we'll start with Steve Wagner and then transfer over to Steve Deller in terms of, again, like, how much does the political environment really affect the outlook and what we can do to prepare?
Look, it's a great question, Michael. I will tell you, I believe it's not where your focus should be. The challenge that investors have going forward is in my mind, very simple. The environment over the last 10 years, all right, so when you think about returns, I can't tell you what the market's going to do, what your portfolio is going to do over the next month, 3 months, a year. But I'm pretty confident in telling you where I think it's going to do over the next 10 years. And the reason I can say that is we understand from historical perspectives and through different administrations, whether it's Republican or Democrat, assets have a certain return associated with them. So if we're going to specifically talk about the stock market, average annual return over the last 100 years of the stock market is 10%. We've just gone through a decade where the return has been 14% over the last 10 years, which means when you think about forward returns on equities, and we always talk about a reversion to the mean, you're looking at a world with much lower returns from financial assets. All right, so we have an estimate of 5 or 6% over the next 10 years. But your biggest challenge for investors in that environment is the Fed. We talked about it before. The traditional way of offsetting risk, which is a combination of stocks and bonds, which has worked very well for the last 35 years, almost 40 years from 1981, may not be, and we don't believe will be beneficial to investors going forward. When you have a 10-year treasury rate at less than 0.7%, bonds do not provide the offset. So the challenge for all investors is going to be, when they look at their portfolios, lower expected rates of return from risk assets. How do I offset that with other types of strategies and other investments that can round out the portfolio? Because you don't want to be driven, which is what has happened in the last couple of years, to buy all risk assets. And that's what zero interest rates does. It gives you no return in cash. It gives you no return in fixed income. And it drives you to extend risk profiles that you're probably going to be uncomfortable with if things change. And so that, to me, is the single biggest issue that investors need to concentrate on today, how they're allocating across the portfolio, where they're offsetting risk, and the types of strategies that they need to take on outside of just traditional stocks and bonds to let them get from point A to point B.
Stephen, that's a great answer. I think we both agree that administrations come and go. It's a reality. Tax policy comes and goes with those administrations. We've seen the estate tax repealed, five times. Rates go up and down. Vice President Biden's proposals aren't excessively aggressive. They harken back almost, you know, they're less aggressive, candidly, than President Bush's proposals, except for his proposal about removing the step up and capital gains treatment. But the rate changes, well, it goes back to President Bush rate changes. His policy isn't exactly socialist. But the point is that administrations are going to come and go, and if we have a Democrat come in, we'll see another Republican come in, and it'll ebb and flow. And even as it is, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is a short-term policy. It's not a permanent, for the most part, not permanent. I always tell people, don't do things purely for tax reasons. Tax is the tail, it's not the dog. The dog is you do things for economic reasons. If we can get tax benefit out of it, fantastic. I do expect that we're going to see changes in the estate law. It's a long time coming. There's a lot of pressure on 1031 exchanges. And this is neither Republican nor Democrat. This has been threatened for years. We've also seen a little bit of simplification and logic in the tax policies. So take, for example, the changes in international taxes as it relates to U.S. policy. Well, made a little more sense. The new policy made a little more sense to go to a territorial regime. Tax Cuts and Jobs Act simplified a few things, getting rid of AMT. How many times have you looked at your return, seen this AMT thing, and asked your accountant, what is this? Only for them to tell you, I can't explain it. We got rid of AMT. I think what we're going to see going forward are adjustments in rates and reallocation between the classes.
As human beings, our emotions and the way we think absolutely goes back and reflects our own biases. Okay, and if this time we're talking about the political environment, it's astounding how, based on your political affiliation, you see things completely different. When it comes to investing, you actually have to put that aside, all right? Because emotions take over. Emotions are the enemy of investing. There are some things, though, that we do know. And I said we try and focus on what we do know. There's going to be changes in the way we do business. COVID has made some changes that are likely to have long-term impact. And the global environment, the trend towards deglobalization, the reversal of globalization, which dominated over the last decade, okay, supply chains are going to move back to the U.S. more and more, okay? We're not going to leave ourselves in a situation where supply chains can be cut off. It's both parties understand that. That's going to have its own set of challenges, and we're going to have to think about how that impacts pricing. We understand the role that the Fed is playing in this. And as far as the deficit goes, it's going to grow. Okay, so that's going to put challenges. We actually believe that the Fed could stay on hold for 3-4 years, as they say they will, and long-term interest rates will rise. And long-term interest rates are likely to rise because the balance sheet will expand. As our deficit expands, we need to issue more and more debt. The Fed is the single largest purchaser of that debt, right now $120 billion a month. They've indicated that they do not want to increase the asset purchases. They're going to leave them the way they are. The deficit will continue to expand. When you issue debt, there needs to be a buyer for it. Ultimately, over time, that's going to put pressure on long-term interest rates. So I think you need to just focus on the issues that are at hand.
Yeah.
And that is, how do you protect yourself against any changes? Because we're never going to figure it all out. All right. So the things that hurt us are not the things we worry about. They're always the things we didn't worry about.
That kind of goes right back to one of Michael's first questions. What can families be doing right now, and what can businesses be doing? And you just pointed out, be nimble. Always be reevaluating, always be stress testing, and be ready to pivot as needed. And the people who pivot are the ones who will succeed and continue to grow. Those who are so locked into, this is how we do it, this is how we've done it for 100 years, and this is how we're going to do it, are the ones who are going to see the consequences.
Yes, the opportunities are what you also want to focus on. Because wherever there's risks and dislocations, there are opportunities.
Absolutely.
I think, as Steve has explained, focus on the tax side and the estate side and things that you can do. Today, tax loss harvesting, if you've got assets that are down, understanding your estate situation and trying to be nimble, trying to anticipate those changes. And on the investment side, as we pointed out, you need to think past traditional stock and bond. Think about the areas that are untouched. And if you look at corporate debt, first of all, corporate debt is at the highest level that we've ever seen. Now, the Fed in March, in unprecedented actions, got involved in the debt markets. Normally, they're purchasing treasuries and they're purchasing mortgages to kind of keep longer term rates down. We've addressed that issue. The Fed also got involved in providing liquidity across the board for corporations. That has now turned, we no longer have a liquidity problem. But we do in a lot of industries have solvency problems, okay? Whenever there's dislocations, there are going to be opportunities. So think about in distressed debt situations, direct lending situations, where there a lot of the banks have been taken out of the equation, and there's direct lending vehicles that we can look at that will give cash flow that you can't get in the public markets, as well as on, you know, in the dislocations that we believe are going to come in the real estate markets. That is just starting to become, you know, become evident. Up until this point, there really hasn't been a lot of transactions. We haven't had a lot of price discovery. We know that's coming, and the people we talk to know it's coming. And you want to position yourself to be able to take advantage of those things.
You know, we talked a bit about the Fed balance sheet. So in August of 2007, the Fed's balance sheet was at $870 billion. By early 2015, it was at $4.5 trillion. And as Steve Wagner mentioned, it's now above $7 trillion. So I'll pose this to both of you. What are the opportunities that may come, either investments or tax policy, that come with this massive expansion of the Fed balance sheet?
Well, I think, you know, kind of what we've been, you know, trying to point out, when you think about the balance sheet expanding and deficits temporarily aren't a problem, deficits long-term can certainly be a problem. The deficit right now is the largest percentage of GDP since 1945. It's certainly an issue. You only change deficits two ways. You either grow your way out of it, okay? And I think we've tried to point out in this situation, it's unlikely that we're going to be able to grow our way out of it. With some of the trends of changing supply chains, increased costs, likely, you know, higher taxes, GDP, unless we have magnificent improvements in productivity, is not going to grow our way out of it. So tax policy is going to be one of those things. So the opportunities do come in, as we've been talking about. And on the investment side, it's stay away from the things that the Fed is buying. Okay. You know, they're supporting certain things. Look into the areas where the private markets are being involved, away from where the Fed has influence. And that's where you're going to be able to find the dislocations and the opportunities.
I absolutely agree. Look, I'm a bit of a contrarian by nature. And whether you're a contrarian or you're a skeptic, it's important for families to be open-minded right now. Again, it comes back to nimbleness, being ready to pivot, being ready to look at other opportunities and alternatives, which may be a major departure in thinking. But I absolutely echo what Steven says, that that's where the opportunity is going to be, is in alternative thinking.
Thinking about down the road, right? Ultimately, I would think Fed policy has to normalize. How does the Fed do that? And what are the implications for people and families as that happens?
Wow. It's the policy's been so static for so long that it's hard to remember a different time. But Stephen, you're more the expert there than I am.
Yeah, I think we got a look. If you watch Chairman Powell's press conference yesterday, he kind of skirted around, yeah, you know, that issue. And it's one he doesn't really want to talk about, because you only have to think back a couple of years when the Fed, after, you know, 10 years, you know, post 2008, tried to end QE, quantitative easing, and tried to normalize interest rates, and the market had an absolute temper tantrum. Fourth quarter of 2018, and we had a 20% correction. It wasn't until he came back out and gave the old clear sign that rates were done being raised and in fact they would be supportive, that the market started to go higher. So we've become addicted to, you know, what the Fed is doing. Their exit is going to be, in my mind, really, really difficult to navigate. You've got a decade built up now. It accelerated, you know, on steroids due to COVID. Getting us off of that is going to be really difficult and quite frankly painful. you know, for financial assets at some point in time. It's going to be much harder than it was navigating and providing liquidity on the way up.
Sure. You know, I'll borrow a phrase. It feels like winter is coming, right? So to transition to maybe a more practical topic, what can families be doing to prepare for this winter? Mr. Geller, why don't we start with you?
So there's near term and there's far term. Near term is, let me talk about far term first. Far term is they should be stress testing their plans, whether they're estate plans or business plans, they need to be stress testing them. Are the plans that we created years past even applicable anymore? I've talked about nimbleness. I've talked about nimbleness to the point of ad nauseum, but that is key. Businesses need to be nimble right now. They need to evaluate. They cannot make decisions for the future the way they've made decisions for the past. Businesses change permanently. Maybe not permanently, maybe, but for a long time. I think I mentioned to you guys in conversation, look at Avenue of the Americas. Who would have thought that you could roll a bowling ball down Avenue of the Americas? But you can right now. And that's going to be a long-term effect. It might turn around in years. But in the meantime, that's going to force people to change how they do business. Real estate owners, tenants, people in the janitorial business, people. There's so many different related aspects to that. So the key is right now, I really think, be thinking about your plans, reconsidering your plans. Where are opportunities right now? I think that if you are a real estate buyer and you've got cash, it's a tremendous time to be building portfolio, even if you have to sit on it. Lower interest rates generally drive cap rates down. So you may see some buying opportunities there as sellers are motivated to get out. Obviously, stress test your estate plans. Right now is the time to do it. I cannot emphasize that enough. We've got this wonderful cross of valuation opportunities and the high exemption that we all know will go away. So take advantage of that. Reevaluate. The old idea of defer. Maybe right now you want to accelerate. Under a Biden presidency, we could see a change in capital gains taxes. I don't think it's going to go to ordinary rates, but we could see something. We could also see the removal of the step up. Okay, so that matters for estates in the next 4-8 years. It may be reversed under a different administration. What does that mean? Maybe instead of considering that 1031 exchange, you consider paying the tax or doing an opportunity zone and deferring the tax a little bit and reducing the tax. Consider alternatives right now.
Yeah, I would echo Steve, but you know, the idea of stress testing is quite apropos in the investment world as well, and very easy to do. Yeah. Financial assets are easy to model out. I'm not talking about predicting which way markets are going, but you can model in on an existing portfolio what a change in interest rates means, what a change in long-term rates might mean, what different PEs might mean. I think it is a matter of understanding where you are, being a realist about what challenges might be ahead. Notwithstanding that, the market has actually been spectacular. And as I said, I have zero ability to tell you where this market's going to be in a month, 45 days, 6 months, or a year. The movements are incredible. When you see not small companies, but behemoths move 5, 6, 7, 8% in a day, routinely, one direction or another, it's insane. It's wonderful on the upside, and I'm not telling you this thing. I must go back to Alan Greenspan's Irrational Exuberance, which was 2 years early. Okay, it didn't come to fruition for 2 years. I'm always a believer in we think about where we are in cycles. The only sure thing in financial world is that there's a cycle to everything. We don't know when it's going to end, and we don't know the magnitude of the change, but everything has a cycle to it. So you try and think about where you are in investment cycles, in interest rate cycles, in real estate cycles, where you are in your life cycle. Okay, what is important to you? What are you trying to accomplish? A stress test is a good idea, but it's I think educate yourself, be aware of where the challenges might be and where the opportunities are.
You know, one of the things we've talked primarily about federal policy, we haven't talked about state policy. State tax policy, especially in some of the bigger states like New York and California, are leaning towards a very aggressive stance, and that should be taken into consideration as people plan. Whether that means you're using non-grantor trusts in tax-friendly states, or you're considering moving your manufacturing plants, you should be considering these factors as not just what you're going to be doing, but where you're going to be doing it.
You know, Steve, it's interesting, and it just brings to mind when you talk about state policies. It is probably the biggest area that I think about that an administration who's in the White House and who controls the Senate is the impact on states' budgets and the municipal bond market. Yeah. States and municipalities are hurting, okay? Yeah. In certain areas, a lot more than others. And there is no question, based on which administration is controlling it, whether we're going to get, states are going to get relief, whether municipalities are going to get relief. And that absolutely affects, which for a lot of people, the ultra high net worth world, their municipal bond portfolios, really start to think about, you know, the types of bonds you own, where the revenue sources are, and how states are being affected on their budgets. They're being squeezed across the board in certain areas considerably more than others.
Right. COVID was a massive factor in that, hit the states extremely hard. When do you think we'll start seeing the impact of COVID on states, or do you think we're already seeing it in terms of their credit?
Well, you're seeing it in certain credits. So if you look at, I'll give you New York as an example, yields have started to move higher to compensate for additional risk. And depending on the revenue source, whether it's a sales tax or it's a transit authority, MTA in New York, which obviously faces significant issues in public transportation. But I think the area we're going to see it as well is in how we're going to deal with impending layoffs in municipal employees. So whether it's fire, police, other essential services, the budget deficits are going to be very, very tough. And in high tax states, I don't know that you can tax anymore. Okay. Or they'll think of some ways.
Finding ways.
but you run the risk, just saw today in New Jersey. New Jersey just voted to put, raise the tax on incomes over $1 million. So it's an additional surtax. They already had one on over $5 million.
Yeah.
But these all have long-term effects when you're talking about, tax policy. Where are you locating your businesses? Where are you taking your personal residences and services that have to be performed? But I think we're going to ultimately see if the cities and states can't raise revenues, increase layoffs and challenges to those services.
Well, gosh, thank you guys. Thank you for your wisdom and your insights. I know I certainly enjoyed the conversation, and I think everybody else did as well. If I could summarize a bit from what we heard today, I think it really falls into a few points here. I think first, and this was said multiple times, be nimble. Second, now is the time to really do a formal stress test of your business plans, your estate plans, really all of your plans in general. Third, it seems like it's really important to take the emotions out of your decision-making process and that your plans really should be apolitical. Fourth, now really seems to be the time to take advantage of valuations and low interest rates. And what you really should be doing most of all is have a conversation with your advisors, tax and investment, regarding all of these matters. It's really important to talk to your advisors to see if there's anything important in the investment landscape to be looking at, as well as any opportunities that may be out there that you should be taking advantage of. So please keep an eye out for the next segment of this series between Omnia Family Wealth, Morris and D'Angelo. We really appreciate you taking the time to spend with us today. I hope everybody stays safe and stays well. Thanks again and have a great day.
Bye-bye.